and thank you for checking out the Keynote Speaker Podcast from the Princeton Tech Meetup. Each week, the group welcomes a keynote speaker to address the community on a variety of topics related to technology and entrepreneurship. This podcast is to ensure that members who can't make it don't miss out on the valuable insight. If you like what you hear, come join us in person for the chance to network with other members of the community by checking out meetup.com/Princeton-tech. This month's speaker was Joshua Spodek, a PhD in astrophysics and an MBA, entrepreneur, leadership coach for Columbia Business School's program on social intelligence, adjunct professor at NYU, columnist for Inc., and blogger at joshuaspodek.com. Joshua has created an amazing entrepreneurial course that trains people into thinking like an entrepreneur, and he graciously shares the key lessons during tonight's meetup. If you would like to learn more about the course or sign up to take it, you can check out the full offering at joshuaspodek.com/courses. We hope you enjoy Josh's presentation, and we'll join us next time at Princeton Tech Meetup.
Good to see everybody here. You know, part of me wants to get started right away, especially because there's people in the back, and I was thinking they have to stand this time, but they also have the pizza. So I figure maybe it's for the people in front that I should go quickly. So, okay, so I want to get started right away. You asked who the techies were and who the providers were and things like that, but I'm kind of curious, how many of you want to start a business versus already started a business versus never want to start a new venture? How many people have already started a new business? Okay, that's like 2/3 it looked like. How many people have not yet started but want to? And how many people just never want to start a business? A few, okay. Okay, just getting a feel. And what are some of the reasons people are here? If maybe one or two or three people don't mind sharing, just to get a feel.
For networking, meeting new people.
Okay, networking and meeting new people just in similar areas. Uh-huh.
Networking, meeting new people, and actually now looking for a job.
Okay. Not creating your own job?
Not yet. Not that ambitious at this point.
All right, I'll check with you at the end of the talk. And one more?
Advertising for positions.
Couldn't hear you?
Advertising for positions.
Advertising for positions, so you're looking for people.
Yep.
So everyone's going to find him afterward. One more?
Potential for new business.
Potential for new, okay, so kind of networking also. Okay, cool. Just getting a feel. Okay, one more. Oh, talk of crowd.
Make money out of the products they have already.
Okay. Okay, great. I'm glad to hear it's like a wide bunch of different things. And, oh yeah, here's this myth that I hear a lot, and I just want to get a feel for this. How many people here feel like to start a new business, you need a great idea? One.
A few people. That's what I think.
Oh, because you're already doing it. Okay, so a few people. Good. I'm glad to hear that because that's one of the big myths that is actually one of the things that drove me into what I'm going to talk about. So I'm going to talk about a little bit of stuff at the beginning of who I am and some background and what drove me to context. But really, the bulk of this is going to be about how to behave and think entrepreneurially, even if you've never done that before. Was anyone here at my talk last year? Okay, so that one, this is kind of similar, except that one was 8 steps to go from no idea whatsoever to funding. And this one is going to be, it's actually 10 steps now. I mean, 25% more. Well, I'll point out the new steps. So I found that they're very much more effective, that these two steps add. Anyway, what I want to do is give you guys the ability to, if you haven't started a business or you've thought about being entrepreneurial but you've never done it, a lot of times you know what to do but you don't really know the steps, the little steps to take to make it not seem so risky. To me, starting a business, to me the biggest risk is not doing something you care about if you could, because I don't want to retire and not know what I was doing. And a lot of people think the risk is doing something, but I'd like to change that for you guys as well. So to think that starting something is not a big risk. So, all right, your needs, as I understand, this is what I prepared a talk, figuring this is probably what people are here for. So I'll put up a few your needs as I understand them, and hopefully it'll cover everyone here. So one is that a bunch of people here probably start new ventures. So I saw a lot of hands go up there. Probably a lot of people want to think and act entrepreneurially, even if you don't necessarily want to start something new. So you want to have ownership of a project that you, even if you're in a company that you didn't start, even if it's a big company that's not new or young. Then there are probably people here who are good at tech, but maybe don't have a lot of business skills. So this is a lot of, this hopefully will provide a lot of that. Did I miss anything? Did everyone here get at least one thing here that covers them? Is there anything else should I take anything off or put anything on?
How to market when you're doing something that might be obscure to others.
Okay, how to market when it might be obscure to others. I think I'll cover that. If it doesn't seem covered by the end of it, let me know and ask again. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, all right, so the agenda is going to be, like I said at the beginning, a bit of context. I'm going to talk about myself and a little bit about some people who've gone through the course that I'm going to describe to give you an idea of what you get when you do this course. Then the context, what the pedagogy and what drove me to create what I'm going to show to you. And then I'm going to go really quickly the 10 steps that I talked about. And that's going to be one slide, but then the bulk of it is going to be the 10 steps I'm going to go through. And for people who, if you just pay attention to I should check. Can I get the slides to everyone?
Sure. Yeah, we can post them after.
Okay. So I'll make, sorry for the people who are taking notes already. You'll get the slides. And if all you want to do is here's a basic structure I can follow, the slides and this talk may be enough for you. For others, there'll be, I'll describe the course at the end. I'm also going to describe some results. So for a lot of you, I think this may be something for you to walk away from and say, I know what to do, I can get the slides, I can listen to we're going to post the audio, and I can do something that I didn't think I could. For others, if they want more depth, then I'll talk about the course at the end, and there'll be discounts and all that. So that's what we're going to cover today. I should be able to keep it under an hour. If there are questions along the way, just raise your hand and ask. So a little bit about myself. First, if you looked at my resume or my CV, you'd see, as you mentioned, I have a PhD. There I'm getting it. It was in astrophysics. At the time, I still love physics. So I was getting the PhD. There I was. I worked on a satellite. It's up there orbiting the Earth, still working long after it was supposed to go for 10 years. We're now 16 years in, so very happy about that. And although I have to say, I went in to do research, and I thought I would love it. It wasn't really what I wanted to do. I realized it was a great education, but I just didn't like the life of research. And some friends of mine and I said, or some friends came to me and said, let's start a business. I had an idea, and here's the first article about me in the Wall Street Journal, about the company in the Wall Street Journal. I'm not going to go into the business, but it was that was the technology that I created. Loved it. It was the late 90s. Things were going really well. Early 2000s, we hit a recession. Physics is good for a lot of things, but not for how to manage a company through a recession. I got squeezed out by the investors. Very painful experience. But I realized I really loved starting a company, and I loved pursuing my passion, and I knew that I wanted to keep doing that. And I also knew that I needed more business skills. So I went back to get an MBA, looking suspiciously like I did when I got the PhD. That's the good picture. And I went in for the hard skills because I thought my company's running out of money. I better learn how to do some finance and accounting. And I did get those skills, but I found the soft skills, like entrepreneurship, like leadership, like negotiation, and things like that, were much more valuable. Things that emotional awareness, social skills, were things that I just I didn't understand, I didn't really know about. I kind of swept that stuff under the rug. And since then, this is about 10 years ago, this has been my big passion. And actually, for the past 10 years, my passion has been what's going on the side of life that I didn't really get, which has been improving my life tremendously. But also in the past couple of years has been not just what's going on, but as I've taught more, is how do I teach this? Because I knew that what I got a lot of lectures and case studies, and in the case of entrepreneurship and leadership, a lot of biography. And that stuff was more useful than nothing, but I knew that there was a lot more, because when I went out in the world and I started trying to practice entrepreneurship and leadership and things like that, I would go into a room and I'd say, okay, I'm doing a negotiation. And I know, I've read the book. I know all the principles of negotiation. I walk in, and the second that it starts, I'm like, everything's out the window. I forgot everything. I don't know what I'm doing. And I learned that learning about a subject is not the same as learning to practice the subject. And I go out in the world, and I did learn it in the world. So why shouldn't we be able to learn that? Why should we not be able to learn that in a classroom or in a school environment? Why can't we structure that? And that's what the past several years have been for me, has been taking pedagogy that works in other areas that are like entrepreneurship and applying that into teaching entrepreneurship. And so this course is the output of that. The courses that I teach in university are the output of that too. And I just covered a lot of stuff that's later in the talk. But it's a passion of mine. So Esquire named me best and brightest a few years ago, and very proud. I don't know if that's related. I don't know, but I'm very proud. And so I have to put it up there. Okay, so I'm an executive and personal coach. I do a lot of one-on-one coaching. Also, with the Columbia Business School program in social intelligence, I coach leadership and sometimes give talks there. And I'm an adjunct professor at NYU. And so the course, actually last year, the people who came heard me talking about a course that I had taught once in the engineering school, but since then I've taught it several times more. And the course, the online course that I'm making available here too, has been, many people have gone through it as well. So it's much more mature now than it was before. Then there's, hopefully make this your favorite blog. There I'm swimming from New Jersey to Manhattan. A cool story that I'll, another time. I post every single day, so I recommend checking out. And then recently every day, I saw a look of like, really? I'm like 2,200 posts. I haven't missed a post in 5 or 6 years, which is, that's a whole other story. But it got me this. I'm a columnist for Inc. And so I write about entrepreneurship and leadership and hustling and things like that in Inc. So now let me tell you a couple stories about people who have gone through the program to give you context of what, if you do what I'm talking about, you come out with. So Anil was one of my one-on-one coaching clients. And he came to me and he said, I saw that you have an entrepreneurial background, and I would like some coaching because I work at a company. We provide services to hedge funds. The guy was making a lot of money. He was very happy in terms of he had job security and so forth. But he kept giving. He wanted to have access to like strategy and decision making in the company. And he kept coming in with proposals, and they kept listening to him, and then they would never act on the proposals. And he felt like they weren't listening to him. He didn't feel valued. And so he went through a bunch of these exercises. And after a little while, he came back and he said, Josh, I don't want to leave my company anymore. I don't want to start my own company. And I said, why not? And he said, well, we've been doing these exercises together, and I've been listening a lot more to what my managers want and what the problems at my company are. And I've learned to present these things in ways that are responsive to what they are looking for, to solving problems that they care about, not just things that I like. And so the last proposal that I gave them, they said yes to. And so he realized that he could get ownership of a project in his company. He didn't want to start a business, register an LLC with the state and hire a lawyer to do all the patenting and trademarking and stuff like that. And he didn't want to get a benefits package for his employees and go for a year without pay. He wanted ownership. He wanted a project that was his. He wanted to know, this is something that I created. And that's what he got. And so that's one outcome that can come out of this. Another is Nikita she was an undergrad, or she still is an undergrad, and going in the direction of law. And I think still is planning to go to law school. And you'll see that there's a project that you work on over the course of doing these exercises. And her idea was to do, I'm not going to go into the details, but it was a medical device. And when I heard her describe the project, I thought, medical device, FDA approval, this is going to be kind of hard. I don't know if this is the right thing to do, but I also thought it's going to give her something to work on through the project. So as you'll hear in the exercises, she has to go and talk to a lot of people. And she talked to some doctors. And the doctors put her in touch with this doctor up in New Haven, I think at Yale. And that doctor put her in touch with the medical device company. And that medical device company took her project. And last I heard, which was like a couple weeks ago, they're in prototype. And she is quasi-leading a group of medical engineers, people who are very capable of engineering stuff but did not come up with the stuff on their own. And she's like a valuable part. And she's, I think, 20, 21 years old right now. Nice thing to put on your resume. Then, so Grace was a classmate of Nikita. Grace always wanted to go in the music business. When she wanted to take my entrepreneurship class to learn about entrepreneurship in general, had no idea she was getting into something that was experiential. And her thing was that she, can I say this quickly? She was really into the music business, and she wanted to, do you guys know things like Governor's Ball, like these summer festivals? Like, I'm too old for it, but you guys are all younger than me. So there are these big festivals, and one of the programs that they do is you can volunteer to be at the event, and then you don't have to pay. So you go around picking up trash and stuff like that, showing people what lines to go through. And her idea was, since those are kind of expensive to go to, and the volunteering is just picking up garbage, she would create a separate organization that would organize with the city of New York, and like soup kitchens and food pantries and things like that. You would volunteer at charitable places and get the ticket instead from volunteering there. And you might say, well, wait, now they're giving away tickets but not getting the benefit of the labor. But it turns out they don't always get such great press. And now they can say we've donated so many thousands of hours to these places. And they're all in, well, Governor's Ball is in Randall's Island, so it's in Harlem right across the way. So all these people coming through are people who have volunteered their time. And this led to her working with SFX, which is a publicly traded company that does these other big festivals. And I was there when she was meeting with SFX, and this guy's like running this big division in this big firm. And he's like talking to her, and he's like, he kept asking her, what about this problem? What about that problem? And she keeps saying, well, we did it with Governor's Ball this way, and then we refined it and worked that way. And I'm like, wow, she's really answering these things well because she's talking through my experience. And he says to her, he just pauses. And he says, by the way, how old are you? She goes, 19. He goes, oh, interesting. Okay. And then he goes right back into business. And that's the sort of thing that comes out of this, because the projects get you out in the world working with people. So RJ, I'm not going to talk about his project, but I will tell you that he was a student of mine and last fall. And when he came back in January, we got together, and he was telling me that his family runs a retail store back where he is at home. And he's back at home for the holidays. And they say, you know, get to work, get on the floor and go sell some stuff on the retail, on the floor of the store. And he goes there on the floor. He outsold the professional salespeople that have been working there for years. And he's never taken a sales class. My entrepreneurship class was the only class he's taken remotely like it. And he said he was just going out on the floor and doing the stuff that we worked on, and he outsold the salespeople. So there's nothing in my course about how to handle disgruntled salespeople. That he had to figure out on his own. But that's the sort of thing. It's not just for entrepreneurship. Shireen was a student of mine who, she wanted to go into fashion, and one of my guest speakers came in from fashion in various different ways. And after he spoke, she said, can I meet with this guy? Can you be in touch with him? And I said, is it related to the course? And she said, yeah, actually, I'd like to get advice from him and so forth. And she talks to him and develops a relationship with him that a couple weeks later, he's really high up and really well connected. And he invited her, and she got to go to a Victoria's Secret fashion show. Like, if you're in fashion, I think that's like a pretty big thing, a pretty big deal. I certainly would have liked to have been invited. So these are a few examples of outcomes. And by the way, Shireen, on the first day of class, when I said, you guys are going to be taking this stuff that we're doing, and you're going to be doing a project of your own. You're going to start a project of your own that you may continue after class ends. It's up to you if you do or not. She raised her hand and said, what if I'm too scared to do this? What if I don't know how to do it? And I said, you're going to go step by step. It's little steps by the end you'll feel like you've gone very far, but each step is not a big deal. And that's, it ended up she's doing stuff that's like fashion stuff. Okay, so, sound interesting? Okay, by the way, everyone can hear me in the back, just to make sure? I should have asked a long time ago. Oh, Tyler. One more story? All right, well, I'll be really quick. Tyler, his idea was to start a program for young African-American males in high school to come and to bring them into NYU. And he kept showing me the stuff that I was looking at. Like, it looked like it was going to be too hard to do because it's so bureaucratic at universities to get space and to get things to happen. And next thing I know, this project that he began in my class was happening. Like, before the semester ended, he was bringing cohorts of students into NYU and getting things happening to the point where he actually won an award before the semester ended of doing one of these projects. And he was just doing the homework. And that's what led to it. He was probably doing more than that because he was really getting into it. But that was the structure that he was following. Okay. So some starting points for me that make me so passionate about this is a big one. The myth that I asked about before is a lot of people talk to me about how they want to start businesses, and a lot of them have never started a business, and they don't sound like they're ever going to. And I ask them, now you know the myth that gets me the most of the number one reason people give me for not starting a business is they say that they haven't had the great idea. Now, there's also plenty of other myths. And if you go on my blog, I've written about these various myths. And the thing is, like, take any big company or any company that has like a great product, every single one that I've ever researched, that when I trace it back to the beginning, it was a terrible idea at the beginning. Google was going to go up against Yahoo, Excite, AltaVista, a heavily saturated market. Facebook was going to go up against MySpace. These were like, now they seem like great ideas, but at the time, I don't think going against MySpace, I don't think that would have sounded like such a great idea at the time. And so there seems to be this big disconnect that the people who are most successful did things that the people who aren't getting started, what they think they need is not what they had. And so it was a big deal for me is how can I get people over that leap? Because that leap for me is one of the biggest, most important things in my life. I felt so trapped in research. Like it was either continue doing research, which I didn't want to do, or go to Wall Street, which I also didn't want to do. And starting a company was the route out for me. And it's been one of the best things in my life. So another big starting point for me is that's come in the past few years is inquiry-driven, project-based learning, experiential learning, which is a different way of learning than lecture and case study. I hope some of you have had experiential classes. If a lot of my students say, I've never taken a course like this, I've never had anything like that. But that pedagogy goes back to John Dewey and Montessori, and it goes back a long ways. And I just have not seen it applied so much to leadership, entrepreneurship, and things like that. And so for me to take something that works very well on fields that are similar, but has not been applied here, what I'm doing is applying it here. So after I took these, when I put these things together and had my first entrepreneurship class, the students really loved it. As much as I'd like to say it was me, I think the structure of the class was very effective, and people, you know, I think a couple of them are still, from that very first class, are still working on some of the stuff that they worked on in that class. My course got nearly the highest ratings in NYU, then it was NYU Poly, the engineering school. And, you know, students who didn't dream of starting projects were starting projects and taking them out in the world and getting feedback from people and getting offers to work on these things. After getting this project going, then I heard about Lean Startup and Eric Ries and Steve Blank. And do people know about that methodology? Okay, so at first I thought there was a lot of overlap between what I did and what they do. And there's some overlap. I'm gonna talk a little bit about, maybe I'll say a few words about how they're different. Because, you know, that methodology is very successful in a lot of different ways. It's very, you know, the people, I've not taken it, but the people who have taken it, and when I talk to them about it, the starting point is you come in and you start with an idea and you start with a team, and it teaches you a management technique. You know, big companies have been management for a long time. Small companies have not. This is like chapter one of the Lean Startup. They've had techniques to manage big companies for a long time. Small companies, not so much. And so they are putting forth a management technique. Very effective, and I think very effective especially for engineers, because if you know how to engineer mechanics or something like that, this is like how to engineer a startup. Now, from my perspective as an educator, my goal is not just to give you a management technique, but to have you grow and learn as a person, to get experiences and skills and beliefs that make you a new person or make you more able in an area that you haven't been before. And also, I've seen people go through that program that they've come in with a project and the project wasn't really something that they really wanted to do. And so at the end of it, they said, now I know what to do if I ever have a great idea. I still need the great idea. And that was one of the big hurdles that I wanted to get people over. How many people here do not have a great idea? A few? Okay, maybe a third, a half. So how many people here have a great idea? Okay, actually last year when I started teaching, last semester, it was the first time I had students in my class who had their companies running and were making revenue. And I wanted to start people from not having any revenue, not having any ideas. And I thought, are they going to leave my class because maybe it's not so perfect for them? And it turned out that they got the most value out of it. They had started their businesses not for reasons that they were internal for them. And it got them to think about things and go back to why they started companies. And at the beginning, it was, you know, they had an idea and people were like, this is good, you should run with it. And they did, but it didn't really resonate with everything that was important to them. So they made minor shifts in terms of the business, but major shifts in terms of what mattered to them. And now they could really contribute to their companies much, much more than they did before, and they had much more greater satisfaction. So let's see, I'll just cover these points. Okay, so the focus of the course is really on doing, learning by doing, but not just doing anything, but doing what works. And I focus on people, skills, experiences, teams, what to me are the soft side of businesses that were really important to me that I didn't have when I started off. Technology is important, but that's not what this focuses on. Because I think there are more resources out there for how to develop technology. So I'm not saying it's not important, it's just not what this focuses on. And also I find that, like in the case of Nikita, when she went to a company, it was easier for them to get, they had people who could do the engineering. They didn't have people who could come up with ideas. Then it's developing entrepreneurial skills, beliefs, and experience. What I'm not putting up there is facts and knowledge and rules and things like that. It's something, these are internal things that you develop and grow with. It's also not about the first venture. A lot of people do walk out of my course with a venture that they're running with, but oftentimes many of them switch in the middle, which I'll talk about a little bit later. But it's the ability to solve a problem when you don't have a lot of resources. If you have a lot of resources, that tends to happen more in bureaucracies. You know, if you have like a big team that you can use, you can do that. But what if you don't have that? Now, you could be at a big company and you have a project that you want to make happen and you don't have resources to make that happen. Oftentimes, you want to start your own thing on your own. That's the situation that I'm preparing you for. And one of the major outcomes of this is not just that you have a project that you really are that you really care about, but also that you have a community of people around you that care about what you're doing and have a vested interest in your success. And the way that happens is you go out and you get advice from them, and they see a little bit of themselves in your project, and they want you to succeed because they give you advice and they want to see that their advice works. It's tremendously effective. And it's also a lot about attracting people and aligning them with your interests as opposed to pitching to them, which leads them to evaluate. Evaluation tends to separate, whereas getting advice tends to get people on your side. So a lot of what's going on here is using techniques that work to get people to work with you and combining. There's no magic in what you'll see everything I say. It's like there's no magic to it. It's just organized in a way that works effectively. I'm not saying it's the only way that you can do this, but it's a way that works. And it's about lowering barriers because of all these myths. And a lot, I don't think that anyone who's taken my stuff has come in with any budget. So all the steps through here don't take any money. They take resources of time and your connections, but they tend to make you enjoy what you're doing. You tend to like doing it. Okay, any questions so far? Ready for the 10 steps? So I'll say them a little quickly now, but I'll go into more depth. Each step will have its own slide later. So the first is to write a personal essay. Now, I don't ask to write a personal essay because I'm going to grade your essay. It's a personal essay to get you thinking about a field that's interesting to you. And it doesn't have to be the only field that is interesting to you, but just one for direction. And also to get you thinking about people. So I ask you to name a few people in the field and some role models, because I want you thinking of human beings, because this is about people. Now you have some direction. Now the next exercise is to think of 5 unsolved problems in the field. And a lot of people think that you need to have really find the problem or find a problem with a perfect solution. But I do not put stress on having a great solution here or even a great problem. Just any problem, because what that is a seed for the process that happens next, which is how to go from an okay problem, an okay solution, to a really great one. You don't need a great one to start off this process. Next is to work with 5 close contacts and to get advice from them on what they think of the project that you have, these 5, and how to get advice from them for how to improve them. The reason for working with 5 close friends is not because you're magically going to have the best advice-giving friends that you could possibly have. What you're going to see over the next several exercises is a trend of practicing with people that you know and moving to people that you know less and less and less, but who are more and more valuable. So that you're going to ask for advice from people close to you. The advice, you may get great advice. Probably you'll get okay advice, but you'll develop skills. So that next time you're going to ask for advice, you're doing stuff that you've done before. And by the time you get to really valuable people at the end, you're comfortable and you ask for advice and it's like not a big deal. You're going to talk to people you never thought you could have, and they're going to like talking to you. After you talk to, and so with the 5 close contacts, the output of that is they're going to help you narrow down to 1 unmet need and solution, and they're going to give you a little bit of advice. Next, you're going to go to 10 friends and family members. So they're a little bit farther than close friends, but they're going to be people who are generally non-judgmental, and they're going to give you more advice and also going to help extend. You're going to start, I give you a script to help use the contacts that you have to get new contacts. So at the end of this stage, you're generally going to have significantly improved your idea, as well as gotten a lot of practice describing your idea. And by the way, you're describing it not like big presentation, polished looking stuff. It's small conversations that entrepreneurs have with each other that if you haven't done, it's practice to do so that you can describe your projects briefly, get advice, get the habit of getting advice from people around you. This is one of the new steps that wasn't here last year, which is to talk to five people with the problem. Actually, you talk to more than five people with the problem, but you have to get from at least five of them a statement of the problem that you're trying to solve in their words from their perspective. This is a major difference. A lot of people go in thinking, I've got this great solution to this problem, and your understanding of the problem and your solution, no one buys things because you think it solves it. They buy it because they think it solves things. So people who know sales know that this stage is going to give you a lot of stuff that later on you're going to sell stuff with. But the real output of this, the outcome of this stage, is that it's a kind of passion that comes from knowing that you're solving people's problems and they value the solution that you're coming up with. It's empathy. And there's a big transition that happens here that people beforehand are like, oh, this is a cool thing that I have, to this solution is going to make the world a better place, and it's killing me that it's not ready yet, and I can't wait till it's ready, and I really want to help these people. And it shifts from being about technology or about like themselves, and much more about the world, and it's this passion that's it's like within them about the outside world, and it's a big shift. Now that you have a sense of the people that you're going to help and the problem that you're going to solve, now we start to talk to people in the field. Now people like the students, their blood pressure starts rising a little bit because they're going to talk to people that are in the field and they might mess up relationships. But it turns out we've practiced talking to so many people, it works out here pretty well. And you're doing the same thing you did before, but this time you're doing it with people that are going to give you much more useful advice and going to give you much more valuable connections. Yeah?
Wouldn't some of those 10 be some of those 5? Because the people with the problems would be people in the field.
Yeah, there can be overlap. It happens a lot of times if you want to solve a problem in your life. Oftentimes, friends and family are already well-connected people. So I just say, add more to the list. So it's fine if they're overlapping people here. Just, I recommend not skimping on the number that you talk to because, like practicing piano, you got to play the scales. Up until now, it's been getting advice from people, and we haven't done anything. Well, some people do start developing their product. You don't have to at this stage. But the next step is where we start figuring out how this company or this project or this, how it's going to interact with others. And so we make a visual model, a visual representation of how your entity is going to interact with the outside world. So that could be, it's generally suppliers, buyers, competitors. If you need licenses, the government. It could be investors. It could be employees. So you make a diagram of how your company and all the other ones in your world and how you interact with each other. It's a pretty simple stage. But as simple as it is, it makes things fall into place. People say, you know, before there was just this nebulous stuff of all these things that were going on, and now it kind of fits together. So here's where it starts really, like, I start feeling like it's a real company or a real project that will become a company. Now, this stage, as important as it is the more important part of this is what leads to the next stage, which is to get into the details and the sustainability and the finance. Now, most people who take my course, not most, but a lot of them have never worked with a spreadsheet before. This stage where we do finances, you don't have to have done spreadsheets before, but you do have to do it now. And you say, you know, you project out what your revenues are going to be, what your costs are going to be, what the profits are going to be. Now, the point here is not what a lot of people think is to make something you can take to the venture capitalists. That's important later on if you need VC or some investment. But at this stage, it's for entrepreneurs to understand your business. There's something that happens when you do the numbers that the details come out like nothing else. It's like doctors looking at your vital statistics. I don't know how doctors do it, but they look at you like, oh, you got this disease. And if you don't do the numbers, you don't know the details. And if you start talking to people in the business and you don't know the details, you don't look so good. Those conversations don't go so well. Whereas if you do know them, the conversations go well. So the output of this is, yes, you got the financials, but they're not going to look polished. Someone who's really an accountant would look at them and be like, this is not appropriate, this is not sufficient. But for you to understand them as an entrepreneur, it tells you what your main assumptions are, what the core part of your business is, and it gets you to that level of detail. This is another new step, is the second personal essay. That when I first started doing this, people started going to the next stage, and some of them had great conversations, but some of them did not realize how much they had grown in only sometimes a few weeks worth of work, well, a couple months worth of work. And the second personal essay led them to realize how much they had grown personally, professionally, their network. And without writing it out, they didn't quite realize it. So writing it out gets them to realize, I'm really someone in this field. I've talked to a lot of people. I've gotten advice. I've put that in. I can honestly say, without name dropping, I've talked to so-and-so. I've talked to so-and-so. And so when you talk to the next stage of 10 valuable people in the field, here we're talking, it could be very well-connected people, could be investors, could be CEOs, could be founders. Now you're talking to people, since you've talked in earlier stages of like the people in your field, when you talk to these people, you're like, you know, I talked to so-and-so and they said this and that made my project improve and so forth. They don't know that you just started it. They don't know that a couple months ago you were nervous and didn't know what to do. A lot of them are gonna see you just like them. Basically the whole course is to set you up so that you can talk to people in the field as a peer and not feel like you're not yet ready. Because as far as they know, you are. And this is to give you that experience to do that. Along the way, also to develop in you the passion, the internal motivation to keep going. Ready for the go into more depth? I kind of covered a lot of the later depth. Any questions on the overall? Does it make sense? Are you guys ready to go out and do it? A couple of hints? Okay, that's actually a later slide, but I'll cover it now. One of the things that I say at the beginning is when you start this off, you don't have to pick the idea that you're going to run with. Don't worry if it's not a great idea, because the skills to identify unsolved problems and to turn those problems into solutions, however crappy those solutions are at the time, and have the ability to turn crappy solutions into awesome solutions. That's what you want. And I say to people, when they take the course at university, you can switch topics or switch projects anytime you want up until the very end. The one rule is that you have to do all the stuff over again if you do switch. So you have to start from the beginning, start it with a new personal essay. I also tell them, if you do switch, you have to do the work again, but the work is going to go so much faster and you're going to like it so much more. And what I found is the more that I teach this, the more people switch in the middle. Even up to like week 8, week 9 in this. Because there's something that happens when you start a project. A lot of people, when they start it off, they think, I want to start something really big, so I need to solve a big global problem. Or my friends do this, so I want to do what they're into. Or this is a big topic right now, so whatever, this stuff from the outside, not internal. And as far as I can tell, the only way you can find what you care about personally that will get you out of bed in the morning, that will get you to jump out of bed, that will get you to talk like I'm talking now, because I love what I'm doing, you have to get the crap off the top. And if you think you've got to save the world in some way that really doesn't matter to you, you got to start off in that way. And then at some point along the way, you realize, now that I know what I really care about, now that I know how to make something happen, those things I really care about that I've been kind of shoving under the rug because I didn't want to be vulnerable about failing at something I really cared about, now that I think there's a chance of me making it happen instead of failing, now I kind of have access to it. I'm not trying to hide it from myself anymore. Did that answer your question? I saw another hand or two.
The outcome of step number 9, is it more to answer the question, how to make it work, or even will it work?
So step 9 of second personal essay is more about you internal.
I meant to say step number 8. Sorry, my vision's pretty bad here.
Okay, so the outcome, so after you do the financials.
Right.
All right, there's something that I like to say, this is in the later slide, but I'll say it now, is that when you first do your financials, virtually everyone goes into this exercise thinking, I got the best company ever. This is going to be cakewalk. This is going to be so easy, so much fun. Then they do the numbers and they're like, it's not profitable. So you got to figure out, generally, you got to raise the revenues, you got to lower the costs, some combination of those. And so a lot of people, you go through this iterative process of changing your model and changing your finances. And I tell them, you remember in chemistry class in high school, you knew what the answer was supposed to be when you took the measurement and it never came out right, so you put what it was supposed to be? Yeah, you're all acting like you didn't do it. There, you weren't supposed to do it. You never mess with the data. Here, you put the numbers in. If they don't work out, you can change them. You're supposed to change them. If your revenues aren't high enough and you got to increase the revenues. But if increasing the revenues means you got to hire a salesperson, you got to put in a new cost, the salesperson. And if you think, oh, I'm paying myself too much, I can cut myself a little bit more, you better make sure, even if it doesn't show up in the numbers, are you going to be able to pay your rent? So you can change the numbers, and you should change the numbers. But if you do, you got to make sure that it all works out. So what happens in the course of doing this exercise is it gets real. Like people figure out, this is what I really have to do. And it goes from like, this is going to be a walk in the park, to I really got to devote myself to this thing. It really matters. It's not so simple. But the level of engagement shoots up. So the outcome is really, you know your business, you know where the assumptions are, you know the details, and your level of engagement goes up. And when it comes time to talk to an investor, if you have to, or you have to show potential employees that you got something that really works, you have your first pass at the numbers. But really, the numbers you get here are not for presentation. Any other questions before going on? I'll probably go a little quick through the next slides because I covered so much in this one. So the personal essay, it's basically right, your goals, your motivation, getting you grounded in what you're doing, your desired feels, and then 9 names. And I want names here. A lot of people say like, oh, I want to talk to the CEO of some company. What's the name of that person? First name and last name, because this is about people. So 3 people who are accessible in your field of interest. So if you want to go into music, it's like they could be people who work at a club, they could be musicians, they could be someone who works at a music store, just someone closer to it than you. And if it's going to be an app in music, it could be an app maker. So it's very broad, someone closer than you. 3 people who are top in that field, you may not feel you have access to them, but 3 people and name them. And then 3 people, they could be historical, they could be alive today or not, who are your role models, people you look up to. And so that's usually a pretty quick and easy thing for people to do. The next is 5 unsolved problems. It's not about the quality of the problem nor about the quality of the solution. This is about getting you started in a process that the process is what you want to learn. That's why people come through. Once you get the process down, you can come back to the beginning and do it again. And in fact, it's not about the solution almost at all. The solution at this stage is really a minor thing. And some of my students tell me, Josh, just have people come up with a problem. Don't come up with a solution because it gets people thinking about the solution, and that's not helpful. But I think you can start with this stage and not have a solution yet. But I think on the margin, I think it's still better to have a solution at this stage. It's the start of a process. Okay, then 5 close contacts. The stage here is that you're going to have 5 unsolved problems and solutions, 5 pairs, and you're going to go to 5 people that you know, and to each of them you say, here's an unsolved problem, here's a solution. Here's an unsolved problem, here's a solution. You're going to resist the urge to start talking about each one of them because these conversations, you can finish it in 5 minutes. You'll find that these conversations go for hours. So I say to everyone, first get the advice at the beginning, then go on to other stuff because you're really going to have fun having these conversations and people like it when you come to them and you say, you know, I've been working on some entrepreneurial stuff. I have these ideas. Do you mind if I share them with you? Doesn't that sound like, don't you want to say yes to that? I have all these little tricks to get people to, yeah? Oh, you want to hear my ideas?
Yeah. What do you do about NDAs? When do they come into play?
Okay, so if someone has a project before this one that they want to, like if they've come in and have a project and I want to do this and I'm taking your course to get my project going, what I recommend is, all right, if it's not an NDA sort of thing that people can hear about, I say go for it. If it's an NDA sort of thing, what I say is pick something different, work on that, develop the skills with something different, and you'll be able to apply it to that one. So no one so far has had an issue where they were stopped from an NDA problem. So work on something different. The skills apply, and you can do your other things separate. You can do it in parallel, but that's what I do there. So the presentation is really short. It's not well put together. At this stage, you're just developing stuff. No slides, no big stuff, and it can take 5 minutes. Like I said, if it takes a long time, let it take a long time. Enjoy those conversations because that's part of becoming an entrepreneur, is talking about ideas like this. Ideally in person, you can do it over the phone or by video chat, but really I try to get people to do this by phone, not by IM or by email. Sometimes people email stuff and I say, you've got to start over again. You need the bandwidth. It's not about polish. It's not about asking for evaluation. That's a big thing I tell people. Overwhelmingly, you're going to tell people, I wonder if you could give me some advice to improve this. And I give people scripts, how to start the conversation, how to continue the conversation. You can use the scripts or not as you like. A lot of times you say, can you give me some advice? And the person says, I think it's great, or I think it sucks. That's evaluation. It's not that helpful. So I help people, like, how do you say, I appreciate that you like it or don't like it, but I wonder if you could give me some advice. And that changes the tone to they start helping you, and they start feeling invested in it. So it's about getting useful advice and building relationships. and getting to people where they want you to succeed because they see themselves in what you're doing. So the result after this stage is that you've gone from 5 to 1 unsolved problem, 1 solution to it, and that solution will be improved. Generally, these people give you some advice that you can act on in some way. All right, that's the input to the next stage, which 10 friends and family members. Now, before you're coming with 5 and then you're asking them to help reduce it to 1, here you have 1. So it doesn't have to be in person, but you're going to ask, same thing. It can take a few minutes. You're going to ask these people for advice. Here's my unsolved problem. Here's a solution. Can you help me improve the solution? And people generally like to give advice. Actually, you make them feel pretty good because most people, when you ask them for advice, they feel like, oh, good thing you asked me. I happen to be an expert in this area. We've all given advice. So, you know, it's all tapping into, like, all this stuff is tapping into stuff that works. So you get 3 pieces of advice from each. Now, you do not have to take that advice. You're going to get a lot of crappy advice. You still say thank you. They still feel invested. You don't have to use that advice. And as you get this advice, you also, if you get 3 pieces of advice from 10 people, that's not 30 unique pieces of advice. You're going to get the same stuff over and over again. The stuff you get the most, that's probably the stuff you should do. You'll know your business better than me, but that's what happens. Also, as you get advice from like the first 2 or 3 people, you start using that advice and improving it. So by the time you're that person number 8 in this stage, it's been improved a lot. And your level of sense of ownership of your project starts increasing a lot. And this weird thing happens at later stages usually. People start thinking that you, as the idea improves, they start calling you a genius because they think that you did it. Even if you tell them it's because of this process, they won't listen because they have their beliefs. You gotta be a genius because they want to protect themselves because they're not doing their thing. So you improve after each one. And you end every, this is one of the big scripts. This is like, this, I believe that this is like worth the price of admission here. Well, you didn't pay that much to get in here, but your time. End every conversation with, is there anything I didn't think to ask that's worth bringing up here? At this stage, you're practicing it. Because friends and family, not generally people in the business, but when you're talking to people in the business, this kind of question gives you answers that you could never have dreamt of thinking of knowing. And the other one, is there anyone that you can think of to put me in touch with that could help me here? And most of the time, you don't get much connection, but every now and then you get connections like to a doctor at Yale who puts you in touch with a medical device company. Next thing you know, you're in prototype. So the result here is that you have a new presentation, again, not yet of slides, it's still just talking, but of an idea that has been improved roughly 30 times, 10, 20, 30 times from different advice from different people. Total cost is 0. And actually, probably had a lot of really fun conversations. Okay, now you're talking to 5 people with a problem. Talk to enough people to get 5 of them to state the problems in their language. Inspiration hits the stage more than any other. And I want to distinguish here between inspiration, feeling inspired like it's December 31st and you feel like going to the gym every day next, or like a couple times a week next year. That's an inspiration that doesn't last. Gyms are empty after Valentine's Day. When you feel like there's a problem that you can make a difference on, that of other people, not yourself, but other people, that type of inspiration endures. That sustains for a long time. And that's what this one is. You don't have to keep this one up. This is one that like you feel like it's killing me that I haven't yet gotten this thing going and I really want to get it going. And what resources can I bring to bear on this? It also brings you focus and clarity in the way that hearing people describe their problems, that they're more real to them than your description are. And if it's not a problem of yours, but just one that you kind of know about, it gets much more, that empathy and compassion kicks in, and these are very human traits that for me, you know, I didn't really get for a long time. That's not what physics is about, empathy and compassion. But business and entrepreneurship is. And that's what sustains me. That's what gets me going. I'm here for you. You being all the people who want to be more entrepreneurial. And it's also a big shift from mainstream stereotypes about entrepreneurship, of like the great idea, or you know, you're just born with it, stuff like that, into empathy and passion and discovering like why you want to do these things. And it becomes more about like your real thing, not just copying others. So now we go to 10 people in the field.
The previous point. Here, it's more about getting motivation from what you're saying than about getting the lingo.
Oh yeah, my stuff, I try to take lingo out of my stuff. And I'm not big on like using lingo. This is about tapping into motivation, that why people go into entrepreneurial activity, that sense of ownership, that sense of helping making the world a better place.
Because you could, the way I see it is you could have identified a problem that people who have the problem don't analyze in the same way. They don't, and you, they will not necessarily share your vision. And actually, I could see that they would damper your motivation to provide a solution. It will never work. That's crazy. And but they still have the lingo, and that lingo can be beneficial for you to build your credibility when it comes to the next steps. And I thought that's what you were.
I thought you meant lingo meaning like jargon. You mean the language of the community that you want to go into? Yes. So this stage is also about becoming part of, being able to speak the language of the community that you want to join.
Establishing your credibility in terms of, you're more credible as a speaker in that field.
Yes. That is an output of this as well. Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of people, if you want to, a lot of people have trouble at the stage of like, how do I find the people with the problem? And I tell them like, go, like, a lot of people have a shift in this stage of, I don't know that many people with the problem. I know that a lot of people have the problem, but I don't actually know them. And like, if they want to do a retail business, I tell them, go into a store and talk to the people on the floor. They know retail. And if once you talk to enough people on the floor, get them to put you in touch with the manager. And you, it's amazing how much more access you have to people in the field than you think. Like a lot of people, if you're doing something in coffee, it's like you're going to go to Starbucks or whatever your coffee shop is, and you're going to talk to people there. And then you're going to work your way up the ladder to talk to more and more people in different ways. But you have access to people more than you think you do. So it's a lot of access here as well. And getting people to think in different ways. Thank you. So for 10 people in the field that are accessible, we're going to do the same thing we did with the friends and family. It's just with different people. And the advice that we're going to get is going to be much more valuable. And there's two questions that we ask at the end. Do you have any ideas that I didn't think to bring up? Do you have anyone you can put me in touch with? Now you're starting to get serious answers. And a lot of people don't know 10 people in the field. You might start off with, you remember that essay at the beginning? You had 3, didn't know I was going to make you talk to them. Well, now you guys know, so I tricked you. Or the trick isn't going to work with you guys. But you're going to talk to, you might not know 10 people at the beginning of this exercise, but that puts more value on getting answers when you ask, do you know anyone I can talk to? It also puts on like research and finding ways of getting in touch with people. And one of the big things I talk about is this, I'm not into cold calling. I don't like to contact people out of the blue. I do give you scripts to contact people to use to make it more likely to get responses from people. But there's an amazing thing that happens here sometimes, which is, this is amazing. It's like you contact someone out of the blue that doesn't know who you are. You get a couple pieces of advice from them. And then you ask them for, do you know anyone else I could talk to? Sometimes they'll give you a contact to talk to. When you talk to that next person, you say, so-and-so referred me. That's a warm connection. You went from a cold connection to a warm connection. It got better. That's creating community. So what happens here is what you've done before. What you did before was playing the scales, and now you're playing music. So now you're going to do stuff that you've practiced before. You tend to get, by now, you tend not to get many new questions, and so you know how to answer them. So you're having conversations with people here that are going pretty well. So it's the same with friends and family members, asking advice, not for evaluation, improving it after each conversation. They're improving less and less all the time. Like, it, you know, at the beginning, it's like increasing a lot, and now it's kind of leveling off. And with the same two questions, and a lot of times you're getting referrals here. Oh, yeah, so one of my students here at this stage, question?
Going through these 10 steps, it feels like, you know, it is for people like who have not started or, you know, who want to start from a clean slate, right?
Uh-huh.
They say like, you know, there are people like, you know, who have identified a problem which they think is a real problem and trying to solve it.
Uh-huh.
Can this course be like, you know, tailored for them? Can I pick up from like, you know, step 5 or step 6 and run with it?
I would not recommend it, because the earlier steps bring in skills that are useful. I'm trying to decide if I should say most or all of the students that I've worked with that had stuff that they had ideas at the beginning, greatly value the stuff at the beginning. It's not about, I'm not telling them to do it because I'm a professor and I want them to do work. It's because you get skills during those stages that most people don't get. And the students that I had, as I mentioned, the students last semester who had, they're generating revenue already, they learned things about themselves that they just didn't have before. And so that type of growth and learning, I mean, I guess you could if you wanted to, I just don't recommend it. And it's pretty quick. If you already have gone through the stages in some way before, people, like I said, people in week 8 switch, and by week 10, they're fully caught up. So it's pretty quick.
Well, and if you're doing it within your field, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to talk to 10 people you've never spoke to before. They just have to be, you know, they could still be 10 people you've already known, but now you're talking to them about this idea, this problem, this solution.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a focus, and when you're talking about something that's yours, these conversations generally people, when you take my course in actually online or at university, you have to write a reflection every week about what happened. You know, you learn by doing, but you really internalize and expand through reflection. And people are like, I didn't know that I could talk to people like this. I didn't realize it was so much fun. It was enjoyable and stuff like that. So there's lots of stuff. It's like, People who are entrepreneurs, who love being entrepreneurs, you become like that from doing these things. Oh, yeah, so the theater director. So one of my students was, she had an idea for a business that was I'm not quite doing it justice, but it was like a cable channel for Broadway shows, which at first I didn't think would make sense because you're going to cannibalize the business, but it turns out there's a lot of people who can't afford to go to Broadway but do want to pay to see the stuff. Anyway, that's her business. But at one point, she wanted to talk to some producer at some Broadway house. So she's like, oh, she doesn't know how to reach the person. So she calls up the Broadway house, you know, a theater on Broadway. And it's like the ticket office or whoever picks up. And she goes, I'm trying to find out how to reach so-and-so. And the person's like, puts on hold. So she's on hold, comes off hold. Hello? It's the guy. And she's like, there's a script. It's like, you know, I'm a student. I'm working on this entrepreneurial project. I wonder if I could ask for some advice. And the guy's like, I don't know who you think you are, but I'm busy. Like, I don't have time for this kind of stuff. And she continues with the script, and he answered her questions. So when she comes in class, she's like, I'm freaked out by this. And so it wasn't the first time something like that happened. So I went through this kind of script where I'm like, were you physically injured? Did you lose money in this conversation? Did your friends see you and laugh at you? Did it ruin your project? And she's like, no. I was like, and we were kind of friendly because the class was a small class. And I go, was there any material change for the worse in this that's measurable that you can tell me about? And she's like, I guess not. And I was like, would you want to do it again? She's like, yes. And the whole class is like, I want to talk to a director and get yelled at. And so this happens sometimes. And that's how, and forever after that, she could say, I spoke to so-and-so. He said this about my thing, and I improved it in this way. And that's the contribution from that guy. And stuff like that happens here. Yeah, sometimes the conversations are like, they don't go so well like that. But no one has ever gotten worse. No one's life has ever gotten worse because of that. And a lot of people are like, oh, I want to do that too. Okay, well, the interlude was talking about the question about changing topics. So I do recommend to people, if you think about changing topics, change topics. When I say topics, I should say problems and solutions. If you want to change, it generally means you become more aware of something internal to yourself that's valuable, that you're protecting. It was a vulnerable thing that you didn't want to fail on. And now that you think, maybe I have a chance of making this happen, now you think, I want to do that. And every case where that's happened, the person has been glad that they shifted. And when you go through the second time, like I said, it's faster. You also learn more the second time. So sometimes it happens between 6 and 7, sometimes 7, 8. Usually happens somewhere later. Okay, so the visual model of all the relevant parties is you want to list, first you just list all the suppliers, all the employees, whoever is relevant here. Could be competition, could be, I don't know, the government, things like that. You got to figure it out. You list them. Next stage is you draw them out, and I explain how to do it, and I'm actually going to show a diagram in a second, where you put yourself at the middle, my company, and then you put each one separate. You have arrows between each one. Each one that interacts, you put arrows between, and the arrows show the value. Sometimes cash going one way, a product goes the other. Sometimes cash goes out, sometimes cash goes in. Sometimes it's value, sometimes it's relationships. And there's an important thing I say here, is that everyone has to be represented, and all the arrows have to balance. So no one should be, if you ever have, or if it doesn't balance, if something's going in but not out, you got to explain why someone's getting something for nothing. If it's going out but not in, you got to explain why someone's giving something, not getting anything in return. Because if you have like a bunch of volunteers who are giving their labor and not getting something back out, which sometimes people do that, you're probably going to have some turnover there. Not necessarily bad, it might work, but you got to explain, that's got to go into your model. Unbalanced arrows, giving something for nothing or getting something for nothing, usually something's off there. So all arrows should balance. And why is this party getting something for nothing, or why is this party giving something and getting nothing in return, and how will they react? So I think I have a drawing here. So this is like one that I took from one of the students. This is the output of this stage. You know, this one happens to be a game developer app. So I don't know, this is just what it looks like. Everyone is different. This one is relatively complex because you have like the users are interacting with the store and with the counselors and stuff because this is like a game to improve people's lives. So you get something like this as the output. Notice there's a bunch of arrows going out with money, and there's one going in. Usually that's often the case. So in this stage, arrows in and out that have money attached to them, those are the left-hand column of your finances. So all the arrows going in, revenues, all the arrows going out, costs. Then I give a little bit of detail, you know, usually it's going out monthly for 2 years. At the top, put some assumptions. If you can't, if you know how to do that, if you don't, you just fill out the numbers of each month. And then you calculate at the bottom the profits, revenues minus costs. And then accumulated profits, so you get an idea of what your greatest loss is going to be. Sorry if I went too fast. But this is the entrepreneur's quick and dirty way of doing things. Again, what I always say in class, if you show this stuff to an accountant, I will absolve all responsibility for this. I'm not saying this is like double entry or whatever. This is to give you a general feel of the size, the scope, but the big thing is to ensure that your firm is viable, that your revenues are greater or equal or greater than your costs, and that it's sustainable, that it can keep going, and that to get to the details, so you know what the assumptions are. Like I said before, it's not chemistry lab. You can change the numbers, just be honest with yourself. If I'm gonna raise my revenues, how am I gonna do that? Is that gonna incur some cost somewhere else? Is it gonna take away from other things that are important to me in my life? If I'm gonna lower some costs, can I really pull that off? Can I sustain that in the long term? You gotta answer these questions for yourself. And that's why the goal is not yet to make presentable financials, it's to understand the business. And this is where my project is awesome. This is gonna be a cakewalk. A lot of people, especially the undergrads, they feel like, oh my God, this is so easy. I can't wait to get this thing going. And then it turns into shit got real. And this is where they're like, holy, I really gotta make this thing work. And it takes a lot of work, but the passion comes out. And I get to curse in class. The second personal essay, as I described, students often don't realize how far they've come. And this reinforcement helps a lot. It's something happens internally that they're like, I look at entrepreneurship differently. There's all sorts of, like, I used to think this, and now it's like different. So they've grown personally as an individual, professionally as a business person. Relationships, they now have a network that's much greater in the field. They also know how to network more effectively. Everything so far has been building up to the next step. And this is what reinforces it. To me, this is like where you create everything now you've been running along. Now you have a platform that you can really jump off of. Solid ground. If you didn't, without this stage, people didn't feel like they had that sense of, I'm now on solid ground that I wasn't on before. And the point is, the next step, you're gonna talk to valuable people in your field as peers. They don't know you just started. If they're founder, they were founder too. And so from the personal essay, the research, the recommendations from 25 conversations at least, you're now going to be able to say, you know, that director or producer, whatever, the guy, the Broadway person, gave me this advice. And you're really talking about it, not faking it. You're not name dropping. You're talking about your actual experience. So you can, yeah, and it's based on substantive conversations, often with people that want you to succeed. Often they put you in touch with people here. Because no one has at the beginning 10 value, very rarely does someone know 10 people in the field. You got to work to get these connections. But oftentimes you're going to go back to people that you spoke to before in the previous stages and get those conversations going again. Hey, I really need to talk to so-and-so. Can you put me in touch? And you end with the same questions here. Here the questions start becoming very different. When you start asking for connections, they start giving you really meaningful stuff. another big thing happens that here's for people who want to be more entrepreneurial, but not necessarily start a new company for themselves. Something happens here when you talk to someone who's a valuable person, a CEO, a founder, someone really high ranking with a lot of authority. When you come in as a problem solver, hey, you know these people out in the world that have this problem? And you can talk about it really like with a lot of empathy because you've talked to people with this problem. You know, I have this idea for how to improve it. These people are so used to people coming in and being like, can you give me a job? Can you give me a raise? I got to work on this project. And you're coming in with what you're asking for is making them feel like an expert. You're coming in as a problem solver. They see you as probably someone, a peer. Something happens a lot that they start sharing their problems with you. Now, there's a technical term in business when someone with authority or high rank shares their problem with you. What's that called? That's a job offer. They may not know it, and you might not know it, but if you know how to handle it, and I say how to do it, which is basically, here, write this down. Well, it's going to be on a slide, and it's going to be here in a second. But it's, this is if you're looking for a job, if you're looking for promotion, you can do the same stuff that I'm talking about here in order not to start your own project, but just to have the managers in your company see you as a problem solver. Because if you're a problem solver and they're high up in the company and you're low in the company, do they want you solving low-level problems that no one cares about? They want you solving high-level problems. They want you talking to them. They want to move you up. So the magic words are, you make them feel comfortable sharing the problems, not vulnerable. I have experience working in this area and I like it. That's like the basic gist of it. I have experience working in this area and I like it. And then throw on, I have a couple half-baked ideas I think might be able to work. Can you give me a little time to come back to you, maybe in a week? Let me fully bake these ideas. Not everyone's going to say yes, but you're going to get a lot of yeses on that one. Now you have a relationship with that person. And if you have time and are able to now maybe do the same process we just talked about with their idea, you might have that project. Now, not so simple, but I mean, simple in process doesn't always work out that way, but the more you do it, the more that sort of stuff happens. Which is why, I'm going to talk about in my online course how I write up all of this stuff, all of these steps in written out, and I also recorded myself doing it, like describing it, each step to someone, and I recorded that, and every time I record someone, before we finish, they get a job. I can't stop them from getting jobs. Like, I can't tell them don't get a job, and they keep getting jobs, and they like, it's crazy. This stuff is, it's amazing. So if you do my course, you'll see that the last one is, I don't have a recording for the last step because they get hired. This is my problem. Yeah, so there was the second part of it. I have some simple ideas that might help. Can I take some time to fully bake them and get back to you? So, okay, those were the 10 steps. Any questions before kind of talking about what happens afterward?
In terms of ideas, coming up with ideas, do you recommend identifying a problem first and working towards a solution? Or could be identifying technology and towards
it? I recommend starting with the problem. If you have a technology, I still recommend what's the problem that you're trying to solve. Because when you a lot of people have a solution, and if you come to someone and you say, they can tell when you're coming in and you want something from them. You want them to buy your thing as opposed to coming in and you want to solve their problem. And even if you do know their problem, for them to share it with you, it puts you in a much better position to listen to them and then sell to them and solve their problem. So any other questions? So some themes, I'm going to tell you some themes that come up in the course. And all I can do right now is tell you these things. Some of you who have lived them, these will resonate with you. What happens when you do this course is by the end of the course, the students are saying it back to me. The meaning, the value of these things, I'm just going to say it to you, and it's not going to mean what it does. But for those of you who take the course, at the end, you're going to be like, holy, that was amazing. Oh, I cursed twice. Personality matters less than skills, and not just any skills, but skills that you can learn. People think you got to be born an entrepreneur. Not the case. And the more that you learn these skills, the more you start feeling like, oh man, I learned this one, I learned that one, I can learn these other ones. The idea of a lifetime comes once a month. This is the other big answer to the NDA stuff, is like, a lot of times you have some great idea, then somewhere along the way you find out someone else had it before and they're already running with it, but you didn't know about it when you started. Or it turns out that it's not as good as you thought it was, or something like that. Wait a month and you got another one. It's that easy, if you know how to turn crappy ideas into great ideas. The issue with, the reason a lot of great entrepreneurs have only one or two great ideas in their life is because they're executing it. The idea itself is really, really easy to come by if you know how to do it, if you've done this process a couple times. Not that this is the only way to come up with them. Better than a great idea is an okay idea plus listening to the market, advice from the market, flexibility, and iterations. To me, iterations is the main measure of the quality of an idea. How many iterations has it gone through? And when you're talking to all these people getting all this advice, a lot of the advice you're going to ignore, but a lot of it you're going to implement. And you're going to iterate. Then when you start doing the financials and the model, you iterate more from a different standpoint. And by the end of it, you feel like this idea is amazing. Okay, you got to do the themes. If you pitch, they'll evaluate. That tends to separate. If you ask for advice and act on it, they'll tend to support you. It's the difference between this and this. You know, adversarial versus going together.
Can you give an example of an evaluation response versus a supportive or advice response?
So I have this idea. I mean, I'm going to speak very broadly, but if I say I have this idea, there's this problem in the world. These people are hungry, and I'm going to bring them food in this way. And someone says, "That's great. That's really going to. That's like a really cool thing. That's a great thing that you should do. That's evaluative. That's great. You know, a positive evaluation." Or if they said, "That problem, I don't know what you're thinking. That's a terrible idea. That's an evaluation." If they say, if you then say, "Well, if you think it's terrible, could you think of how to improve it? That's what I'm looking for. Some advice." If they say, "Well, yeah, if instead of getting donation, you put something in so that you get some revenue that's part of the model, that could work. That's more social entrepreneurship and instead of just charity." Then you go, "Okay, great, thank you. That's what I was looking for, some advice."
So that's good or that's bad? Some kind of.
Good, bad, that's evaluation. They're expressing their values, evaluation, values.
5 minutes.
Oh! 5 minutes, okay. The problem determines the solution. The more you focus on the problem, the better you can solve it. Almost nothing inspires like helping others so much that they pay you for it. Now the pay you for it, it's not just about money there, it's about their values. Do they think this is more important to me than my money? You've got to look at it from their perspective. And that's what really inspires people, inspires you. So results. The results that I see, yes, you start companies, but the big thing is they're learning about responsibility, initiative, empathy, compassion. How to communicate value, creating supportive community. And the big one is uncovering passions by learning how to act on them. That's the biggest outcome of this, is you can act on your passions. Man, I'd love to go through the student voices. I'll pick just one. I have like 20 pages of it's like people saying like, "This is one of the greatest classes I've ever taken." So those of you who look at the slides, you can read this through, but I've got 5 minutes. But there's one that I want to point here. As a senior, this was the first course that challenged me, asking me to think outside my comfort zones. NYU is a very good school. This is an elite school. 7 semesters they've gone through. You know that they've written a lot of papers. You know they've analyzed a lot of stuff. You know they've done a lot of academic stuff. So how are they first time challenged here? Because it's my understanding is because it's personal growth, professional growth. They're changing as a person in a way that abstract knowledge and facts just doesn't do. Overcoming social and emotional challenges, starting small but getting up to some big ones, that's what does it. But note also, it is also where I developed a strong network of support through group projects, because you're working with other people. Pages and pages of this stuff. And then if you click down here, there's more. That blue link is a link. Okay, so the online course, it's not lectures, it walks you through these steps, it's a very structured way. Some of you walk out of here with the slides, with the audio, you got all you need. But if you want more structure, the course walks you through it. Each exercise has a full description written out, plus me describing it to a student, so this audio, and you hear him asking me questions and me answering the questions. There's a checklist after each one of like the important things, so you make sure that you cover the important stuff. And then after that, you write your reflection. When you write your reflection on each stage, that's how it goes, not just starting your company, but actually developing and growing. After you do that, you can read everybody else's reflection, so you can learn from everybody else too, and you start getting this online community. And not only that, but you have access to this forever. So you can learn people, you can see how people grow and learn forever. In the same, in ways that you didn't yourself, even though you did the same exercises. Then also they can read yours. And a lot of people say that was one of the most valuable things that they had. The public accountability of knowing someone's going to read what I wrote makes me write reflections more thoughtfully. The same exercises in the same order, using the exact same software as the NYU students, except they get this classroom experience. Now, I'll point out that the exercises, doing the exercises and the reflections, that's where the bulk of the learning happens. So the in-class stuff is not as important as those things, but you get access to the same forum if you do this course online. And no university that I'm aware of anywhere gives a money-back guarantee, and this has a money-back guarantee. But the big difference with NYU's class is that it's a four-credit class, and they pay $6,000 to take the class. I don't charge anywhere close to that. So for the discount code, the introductory price I'm doing is $498, if you guys want to do it, which you can if you like. And also for the Princeton Tech meetup, by the way, no one has to do this. You can do this just from what I'm talking about here, from this description. But if you put in PTM in the discount code, 20% off for a couple days, then, which is 93% discount, over $6,000. That's a big discount. 10% if it's after Friday night into Sunday night, if you need to take the weekend. And then after that, it's going to go, and it's going to increase at some point in a couple weeks later. Because right now, I'm developing my site, and the word isn't being put out too much. But in a couple weeks, or maybe over the summer, it's going to raise up from 498, because I think that's really low. If you want to do it right now, before the new site is up, I just have my blog. But if you go to my blog, and you click courses right there, you click on the entrepreneurship link in there, you'll see Josh really needs to update his web page. But that's where the course is. And if you want to sign up, you can sign up there and you get the discount code to put in. Oh, yes. If there's anyone here who is interested in doing this and wants to do the entire 10 exercises in 31 days or under, because I want people like that doing my stuff out there in the world saying, Josh's course gave me the structure in order to do that, I will do a 90% discount. I mean, after you do it, if you post and do the exercises, I will refund 90% off of 498, because that's the type of people that I want out there in the world saying Josh's course worked. So I'll return 90% off if you finish the 10 exercises. Now, the site doesn't have that built in it yet. So if you want to do that, you have to email me so I can, you know, mark the date and get the clock going and stuff like that. So if you want to do that, I want to support you. So there's that. And so just to close, this last slide, I think. Think of what you can do when you can make your own luck, when you can make your own projects happen. What doors can you open? What are your Victoria's Secret runway shows? 1 second. What can happen when you create projects that your managers can't say no to, because it's that valuable, because you've tapped into their values. They're the people, the high value people that you connect with. What happens when you outsell professional salespeople? So thank you.